So we're holding on Yud Amud Beis, about the middle of the wide lines, about 15 or so lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of talking about what the story with Loit and his daughters. We say, you know, we know the story, what happened with them in the Psukim. So we had said that Loit himself was very much into Znus, and he, even when he moved to Sodom in the first place, he had in mind the culture of Znus that they had over there, and the result is that later on, in fact, when his daughters got him drunk, then it's not that they got him drunk. You could argue he didn't know what he's doing, and in Halacha, in fact, we say, Shichrusa Shaloit, when a person is so drunk like Loit, he's not really responsible for his actions, but we see from the psukim and from the dot over the vav that he did have a certain dim awareness, at least when he woke up the next morning, what had happened, and it still didn't prevent him from allowing himself to get drunk, and the same thing happening with his other daughter the following night. Meanwhile, we said the daughters themselves, relative to him, are tzaddikim, in that they genuinely thought the whole world would have been destroyed, and therefore they need to repopulate it in this way, and therefore that's what we said, tzaddikim yelchovam, the same way of Hashem, the tzaddikim, such as the daughters, will go in the way of Hashem, and at least to their way of thinking, did the right thing, whereas the Loit is branded as the Pesheya, as the sinner, the deliberate sinner that Yikosh Levam, he stumbles in it, and he's considered, and he's degraded because of it. So the Gemara continues on this theme about Loit and about Loit. Dorosh Rabba, Rabba gave a Dorosha. My Dichtiv, what does it mean, a Pasuk in Mishlei? Och nifshach mikuyas oiz, a brother who rebelliously goes against the powerful city, umidyonim kivriach armoy, and then there's a quarrel as great as the bolt of a palace. So the simple meaning means something like, you know, you have a civil war, for example, you know, where a brother, one brother decides to fight against, to fight against the mighty city, and the result is that there's a terrible rift between them, like the bolt of a, like he's bolted and barred out of the palace. So here we daushin, och nifsha mikiryas oiz, when it says the brother who rebelliously left the mighty, powerful city, zeloit shepedesh from Avraham, that refers to Loit, who separated himself from Avraham. Avraham is like a mighty city, and Loit decided he doesn't need to, Rashi points out a pasuk in Yeshaya compares Avraham to a strong rock on which the Jewish people are founded. So therefore, here in Mishlei, it's using a different metaphor for it. He's like a mighty city that everybody could take, everybody that would protect everybody who's in it. And here, Loit decided to separate himself from that he doesn't need Avraham and his company anymore. When it continues as a quarrel, like the bolt of a palace, that means that with that, he eventually caused a chain of events that eventually led to a tremendous quarrel and rift, a permanent rift between the Jewish people and Ammon and Moab, his descendants, that eventually Ammon, the nations of Ammon and Moab descended from him, and the men from them are permanently barred from entering the body of the Jewish people. So it's all the Gemara saying, you know, we can trace all that. How did it come about that you have these nations that are so degraded that their men, even if they become gay or tzedek, are never allowed to intermarry with the Jewish people? It all starts with Loit deciding that he doesn't need Avraham and rebelling against his company. Another Jerusha also in this connection. Dorash Rava, Vitemir Rabbi Yitzchak, Rava, or some say Rabbi Yitzchak, gave another Jerusha on this subject. My Dichtiv, what does it mean? It says in the Pasuk, this is also in Mishlei. The previous Pasuk, Och Nifsha, is in the middle of Perek Yud Ches in Mishlei. This one is the first Pasuk of that Perek. The Perekim themselves were, the divisions of the Perekim were made up by the Goyim, to be sure, but whatever. The point is, these Psukim are not that far apart. Lasava Yivakesh Nifra, the Pasuk says, the one who separates himself looks for taiva, looks for his desires, over chol tushia yisgala, and an old tushia, which literally means something like wise counsel or whatever, yisgala, he gets degradingly exposed. So the sava yivakash nifrad zeloit shenifrad ma'avraham. The first half of the pasuk is talking about how Loit separated himself from Avraham because he wanted, as the pasuk says, on him vayipodu ishmael achiv, for the sake of his taivus, like we learned before, because the whole pasuk vayisa Loit aseinav, where we said every phrase in that half of the pasuk referred to the taivus of Arias and Znus that he knew take place in Sodom that he wanted to be part of. The result is, v'chol toshia yisgala, when it says he's degradingly exposed in all the places of toshia, where one meaning of toshia is the study of Torah, for a few reasons. It means wise counsel, like you have in Pirkei Avos, in Perek Vav, and then in Men Eitz of Sushia Bina Ugvura, so it means that, which is it means wise counsel, and therefore it means the Torah. If some of the Foshim also explain Sushia comes from the word Yesh, so it means the thing of substance, which Torah is the only real thing of substance compared to all the things of Olam Hazeh. Anyway, Bechol Toshia Yisgala, he's degradingly exposed in all the places of Toshia, Shinisgala Kloinim, Bevotik Knesias, Bevotim Medrashas, that Lloyd's shame is forever exposed in a degrading way in the shuls and in the Batei Medrash. The Tanan, as we learned some in the shuls where we read the Pasuk that we just quoted about Ammon and Moab, and in the Batei Medrash, the Tanan, where we learn the Mishnah, Ammoni and Moab, Asurin, Isur Olam, that an Ammoni and Moab males are also forever to intermarry into the Jewish people. So whenever people gather together in a Beis Medrash to learn Torah, eventually this is going to come up, and Loitz gets degradingly exposed all over again for what he did and the consequences of what he did. The Gemara continues in this vein, so that's as far as Lloyd and his daughters. So now let's talk about a similar concept. We said that sometimes you can have the same, different people can be doing the same thing, but they have different motivations in mind, and therefore that makes a tremendous difference whether it's a mitzvah or an aveira, as we're saying, as far as Lloyd and his daughters. So now the Gemara gives another illustration of that example, another illustration of that concept. V'oma Ola, Tomer Zinsa, the Zimri Zina. You find that Tomer, Yehuda's daughter-in-law, was Mizaneh, you could say, you know, technically there's a poor Matan Torah and all that, but whatever. The point is that maybe technically it was Mutter, but whatever. The point is that it was expected that she's going to wait as a Shemeres Yavam until Shelah is old enough to marry her, until Yehuda is going to give permission, and meanwhile she didn't, and she pretended to be a Zoyna and seduced Yehuda, etc. So she's acting in a way that seems to be very immoral, and so did Zimri with Cosby. The difference is, Tamar, when she committed her ostensible znus, she was doing it for a mitzvah because she wanted to have children. She wanted to have children from Yehuda's family. Her original plan, originally she was married to Er and then Oinon. She didn't have children with either of them because neither of them wanted to get her pregnant. Now she really wants to have children with Shelah, and Yehuda is not allowing her to marry him. So she took matters into her own hands so that she would have descendants from the tzaddik Yehuda. The reward for that was that malach, that kings and neviim descended from her. The whole malchus based David and kings and neviim, you have Yeshaya and Yeshaya and Novi and Omites, so all from the family of the kings. On the other hand, Zimri also committed znus, but he meant l'shem avera nafu kamer revavis miYisrael, and the result is because of that, several tens of thousands of Jews, 24,000 Jews, were killed in a plague because of what he did. So we see, in other words, that you can have, again, two people who are doing what seems to be the same thing, but the motivation makes an enormous amount of difference. It is brought, by the way, in Sifrei Kabbalah, it's brought that actually with Zimri also, like deep down, there was something he is trying to do. He is trying to fix up something in the world, but he went about it in the wrong chutzpahdik way, and therefore he caused this catastrophe. Later on, it's brought that that he and Cosby were nisgalgal in, among other things, Rabbi Kiva and Turnus Rufus's wife, where they have the whole story where Turnus Rufus's wife tried to seduce Rabbi Kiva, and he wanted to have nothing to do with her, and eventually, after her husband dropped dead, and the infamous Turnus Rufus, she became a Giyotis and married Rabbi Kiva. So therefore, in that way, they were able to correct, finally, what Zimri and Cosby had messed up all those years earlier. Okay. Another example of this concept of an action that seems to be an avera, but it can be something else entirely. So the Gemara says, "Amar of Nachum Yitzchok, gdola avera l'shma mimitzvah shaloi l'shma." An avera that's done l'shma is greater in a way than a mitzvah that's done not l'shma. Now that doesn't mean there's no license for a person to just say, "Well, I'm going to do this avera, I'm going to do it l'shem shemayim." We're talking about only rare figures in Jewish history who are able to do it in earlier generations who are empowered to do such a thing. But you do have that concept that sometimes you have those rare cases where a person would do something that is that is objectively an Aveda, but they're doing it L'shem Shemayim in an emergency situation. What do we mean? We're talking about the case of Yoel, the wife of Chevron Akeni, with her and Sisera. So you have the whole story in Shoftim where Sisera and the army of the Canaanim have been oppressing the Jewish people for 20 years. Finally, Devorah and Barak raise an army and go fight against him. Sisera's army is defeated. Sisera runs away to the tent of Yoel because there's an official peace treaty between her family and Sisera, so he figures he'll be safe there. She invites him in. In the pasuk, it just says openly that he asked her for water, and instead she gave him milk, and that made him sleepy, and then she put him to sleep, and then she took a tent peg and knocked it through his skull and killed him. So that removed the danger to the Jewish people. Here, Reb Nachman Yitzchok is explaining, as we're going to see, based on something from the Psukim, that she actually seduced him into having relations with her. So that would also tire him out, and then he's more likely to sleep deeply, and then she'll have more of an opportunity to kill him. So now, that's an Aveira, she's a married woman, but she's doing it Lashma in order to save the entire Jewish people. So we're saying that Aveira Lashma, in a way, is greater than a mitzvah which is done Shaloi Lashma. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Tevorach Minoshim Yoel Eshes Chever Akeni, may Yoel, the wife of Chever Akeni, be blessed more than the other women. Minoshim Ba'oil Tevorach, may she be blessed more than the women in the tent. Man ninhu noshim ba'oil, who are the women in the tent, means Sara Rivka, Rocha Balaya, the imahos. All of them, you have the word tent mentioned someplace in connection with each of the imahos. Now, Sara Rivka, Rocha and Leah were married to the others. They had relations with their respective husbands. And that was a tremendous mitzvah. The chalal, a couple having relations, is a mitzvah pruvu, and especially with them, each of them is doing her part to bring about the birth of the Jewish people. But in a way, it's shaloi lishma, in the sense that, after all, you know, they had hana from it. Husband and wife have relations. We hope that they both have hana from it. On the other hand, as the Gemara is going to establish, Yoel had no hana from the fact that Sisera is having relations with her, even though she is the one who seduced him into it, but she being a tzedekus, she has no hana from it, so therefore her aveda lishma in a way outweighs the mitzvah, the same action, but shaloi lishma from the imahos. So that's one point. There's different mafoshim exactly of what exactly the comparison is. This Gemara is also in Masech Nazir. The mafosh printed there under Rashi's name says we're not talking about the mitzvah of having relations with their husbands, but rather the mitzvah where they gave, each of them gave, well, each of them except for Rivka, gave a shifcha to her husband. Sora gave Hagar, Rachel and Leah gave their shvachas, Bila and Zilpah, respectively, to have children. Then Marsha says that's not the same thing. Yoel herself had relations with Sisera. So there's some back and forth what exactly we're talking about over here. The point is, a mitzvah lishma would be where there's no ulterior motive mixed in with it, and whether you're talking about them having relations with their husbands or whether you're talking about them giving their shvachas because they're jealous of the fact that they're not having children, either way there's a trace of self-interest mixed in, as opposed to with Yoel, there's nothing of that at all. It's purely in order to save the Jewish people. So that's what we're saying, that her Aveira Lishma, for the sake of Hashem, for the sake of saving the Jewish people, is in a way greater than the mitzvah than the mitzvah that the Imahos did. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? What's so negative about a mitzvah shaloi lishma? Va'amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, la'olam yasek on the matorah of a mitzvah safila shaloi lishma. A person should always be involved in doing Torah and mitzvahs, even shaloi lishma, shematoch shaloi lishma ba lishma, because from doing shaloi lishma, he'll eventually come to lishma. So therefore, it has a great advantage. Why should aveda lishma outweigh a mitzvah shaloi lishma then? What it means mitoich shaloi lishma ba lishma, there's a variety of different explanations why that should be so. One point is, there's an explanation apichsidus that it means within the shaloi lishma is already the lishma deep down, a yid wants to do what Hashem wants, and therefore even though he's doing something shaloi lishma, but deep down it really is lishma. Anyway, that's the point is. So why are we saying that an aveda lishma should be greater than that? Fine, the Gemara says, you're right, Ema kim mitzvah shaloi lishma. Fine, you can say, that an Aveira Lishma, such as what Yoel did, is equal in greatness to a mitzvah Shalai Lishma, such as what the Imaris did. So, what exactly did Yoel do? Amar Rabbi Yochanan Sheva Be'ilus Baal Oisa Rosha Ba'Oisa Shah. At that time, that Rosha Sisra had relations 7 times with Yoel. Shenema, as the Pasuk said, Devorah in the Shira, when she's poetically telling over what happens, she says, Bein Ragloha Koran Nofa Shocha V'Gomer, between her feet, he crouched, he fell, he lay down, etc. And she continues repeating the phrases Kora and Nofal a couple of times. Bein Ragleha Kora Nofal, Basha Kora Sham Nofal Shadud. So 7 expressions of him crouching down and lying down. So, and Bein Ragleha, in simple pshat, you would understand that means, in other words, like she lay him down to sleep and covered him with a blanket, and like she's between her legs, like she's being like almost like motherly to him and pretending to be friendly and putting him to sleep. But here the Gemara understands, Bein Ragleha means between her legs, as in having relations with her, and 7, the 7 expressions, Kora, Nofal, Shochav, etc., means that 7 times he had relations, with the idea, again, that she seduced him into that and tolerated that in order that he should be so tired out that then when he goes to sleep, he'll sleep deeply and she'll be able to kill him and save the Jewish people. It's brought up, by the way, also in Sifrei Kabbalah, speaking of Rabbi Akiva, that the Gemara mentions in a different place that Rabbi Akiva is descended from Sisera, that eventually descendants of Sisera became Gerim, and Rabbi Akiva is descended from them. It's brought that actually that comes from this, that eventually she became pregnant from all of this, and eventually the child that she had from this, over a thousand years later, one of the descendants became Gerim, became a Ger, and Rabbi Akiva descended from him. So the Gemara asks, "V'hokam is Hanya Ma'aveda?" The fact is, though, that she is having Hana. How is it? And on the face of it, the having relations is you're saying that it's an Aveda Lishma, but isn't there of necessity a certain degree of Hana in there? So why is she not Moisir Nefesh on it? And then here we're saying that she actually seduced him. Unfortunately, if it happened, a woman is violated. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that could still happen, that in the course of it, that her partial she starts feeling something of it. We don't hold that against her. We say as long as it started ba'onus, then it's still considered ba'onus. But after all, physiologically, isn't there a certain hana over here? So the Gemara answers, no. Amar Rav Yechon, Meshum Rav Shem Menichai, Afilu Tevasa, Meshul Rishoyim, Rahi Eitzel Tzadikim. Even the good that Rishoyim do is considered bad by Tzadikim. They want no part of it, and therefore for them, a real Tzadik therefore considers such a thing bad, no matter what their body might be Derech HaTeva do, they're gonna withstand that temptation, and they're not gonna feel any Hanah from it. So Yoel, in fact, did not have the slightest trace of Hana from Sisera doing what he did with her, and therefore we can call it purely an Aveda Lishma. Getting back to Loit and his daughters, or getting back a moment to the matter of Shaloi Lishma and Lishma, so Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, La'olam Yasek Adam HaTorah V'mitzvahs Afilu Shaloi Lishma. We said a person should always be involved with Torah and mitzvahs, even if it's Shaloi Lishma. Shematoch Shaloi Lishma Ba Lishma, because from doing it, Shaloi Lishma will eventually come to doing it Lishma. And we have an example of that. Shebeschara Boi Mishnaim Korbonis Shehikir Bolok. This kind of also ties together everything we were talking about with Loit, because we're doing it talking about Bolok, the king of Moav, who's descended from Loit. Shebeschara Boi Mishnaim Korbonis Shehikir Bolok Arosha, in the reward for the 42 korbanos that Balak HaRosha brought when he's trying to have Bilam curse the Jewish people. In each place, Bilam tells him, build 7 mizbechas and offer 7 bulls and 7 rams. And they did this 3 times. So altogether, in each place, there were 14 korbanos, and times 3 makes 42. So he's bringing 42 korbanos with the attempt to curse the Jewish people, and even though he was doing it for that negative purpose, nevertheless, Zoch of Yotzim men of Rus, nevertheless, he had the schus that Rus came from him, and eventually that Malchus Beis David and Mashiach and all come from him. We're not even focusing so much on the korbanos that he brought. Rashi points out that David praised Hashem with Shiras V'Tishbachos. So the point is, in other words, not even there's a mid to and mid elsewhere in one other place where the Gemara brings this point. It mentions the fact that from her came Shlomo, who offered 1,000 korbanos at a time. But here we're not even focusing on that. We're focusing on the fact that Hashem, that David HaMelech praised Hashem with shiras with tishbachas. The point being, in other words, Balak is doing this korbanos shelo lishma, and nevertheless he got this reward for it. Tosfos in a number of places where this point is brought in the Gemara points out there's different kinds of shelo lishma. There can be a shelo lishma where a person learns Torah in order to use it as a weapon against others. He's going to use his knowledge of Torah, for example, to cheat and take advantage of others. He's going to use his knowledge of Torah to lord it over other people. He's going to use etc. So those kinds of things, the Gemara is not saying that that's a good thing for him to do shelo lishma. On the contrary, those are bad and he's going to be punished for that. The kind of shelo lishma that the Gemara is saying over here is good is where he's learning Torah, for example, because he wants to be honored, he wants people to call him Rebbe and look up to him, that sort of thing. So we're saying that Balak was doing it in order to try to harm the Jewish people, but from his point of view, as far as he knew, the Jewish people are ready to attack him. At the beginning of Parshas Balak, you have the whole point over there that they're fearful and they're nervous and everything, so it can be considered more like that second kind of Shelo Lishma, and therefore we're saying that he deserved a reward, Min HaShemayim, and his reward was that David descended from him. Because as the Gemara continues, the Amar of Yosef Ber Chanina, Rus bas b'noi shel Egloin, ben b'noi shel Balak Melech Moav. Rus was the granddaughter of Egloin Melech Moav. He also, there comes a point where he deserves a reward from Hashem. He was in the times of the Shoftim. For many years he was oppressing the Jewish people. But when Ehud comes to him and says, when Ehud comes and tells him, I have a message for you from Hashem, then he gets up out of respect for Hashem, and that's when Ehud stabs him. So because of the respect he showed to Hashem, is why Rus says why he had the schus that Rus descended from him, and Eglon in turn is grandson of Balak Melech Moav. Elsewhere, Tosfos points out we don't literally mean that Rus was the granddaughter of Eglon. They're too far apart in history, and likewise, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that Eglon is literally the grandson of Balak. It just means descendants. It means that Rus, many generations later, is descended from Eglon, who many generations later is descended from Balak. Getting back to the matter of Loit and his daughters, Amr of Chir Ba'aba Amr of Yechanan, Minayin Shein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makapeach Afilu Schar Sichana, how do we know that Hashem never withholds even the reward for proper speech, for speaking in a nice, clean way rather than using foul language or whatever. So we see, let's consider what happened with Loit's daughters. De'ilu b'chira de'karyen Moav, the eldest daughter of Loit, named her son Moav, openly saying, Me'av, he's from my father. So, okay, we talked about yesterday the story of Moshe Feinstein and his balabos, where even that there's a justification for, but still, basically, it's a chutzpahdika thing to call him from my father and thereby publicize that she had that she had committed znus with her father. So she names her son Moav, and from him comes the nation of Moav. Omalei Rachmona LaMoshe, hundreds of years later, Hashem tells Moshe, Al Totzer Es Moav, don't bother Moav, Val Tisker Bom Milchama, and don't provoke war against them. Now, why that word war? It means Milchama Hu Deloy, you're not allowed to start a war with them, Hotzer Uri Tzarinu, but you are allowed to harass them. You are allowed, for example, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, it means, for example, like you can go appear in full battle dress in front of them and taunt them and make them think as though you're going to invade them or something. The Ilu Se'ira, to carry Ben Ami, the younger daughter, named her son Ben Ami, just the son of my people. So it's a more Lashon Nekiyah. It's a nicer euphemistic way of saying it, not openly saying that there was incest over here, but just there was somebody from my people that I had relations with and he fathered this son. Omalei, Hashem tells Moshe about Bnei Ammon, Al Tetzurim, Val Tisker Bom, don't harass them and don't provoke them at all. Klal, without mentioning the word Mokoma, Afilu Tzuri Loi, them you're not even allowed to harass, like by appearing in front of them in battle dress or something. So Rashi actually makes another point as well. By the elder daughter, it explicitly says in the pasuk Vatishkav Asaviyah. The younger one, it just says Vatishkav Ima. So even in the pesukim right there, where it's narrating what happened, the older daughter is openly said that she committed incest with her father, and the younger one, the Torah, even though we know perfectly well it was with him, it says so in the pasuk, but it's still like it leaves out that word that it was with her father. So Mefoshim pointed at now. Okay, so on the other hand, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'Avin, Amar Rav Yeshua Ben Karcha. So now, Rav Chiya Ba'Avin says in the name of Rav Yeshua Ben Karcha, here's another point about the daughters of Lot. La'olam yakdim adam l'dvar mitzvah. A person should always be quicker to do a matter of a mitzvah. Shebeschar laila achas shekodma b'chira l'tzeira, because of the schar of one night that the older daughter went before the younger one in this, which again, from their way of thinking, was a mitzvah, in order to repopulate the world, zachsa or kadamta arba dardas the malchus. Therefore, the elder daughter had the schus that her descendants joined the Jewish people and joined the royal family four generations before the younger one. Namely, the older daughter was the mother of the boy Moav, who became the ancestor of the nation of Moav. From them eventually came Rus. Then you have, so Rus marries Boaz. They have a son, Oved, who has a son, Yishai, who has a son, David, who has a son, Shloima. Shloima married Naamah Ammonis, a woman from Ammon, who was Nisgayer, and he married her, and she became the mother, and then their son, Rechavam, became the next king. So we see that there were four generations from when Rus joined the Jewish people until Naamah did. And that was in the schus, because the older daughter went first by one night for this. What we're considering is Dvar Mitzvah. So Mefoshim point out that on the other hand, we just said that the older daughter was more chutzpahdik in the naming. So there's both, really. In other words, on the one hand, the older daughter was quicker to do the mitzvah, or what they considered to be a mitzvah. On the other hand, so therefore she gets a reward for that, to join the Jewish people first. On the other hand, she then went and gave more chutzpahdik a name to her son, and therefore the result is that her descendants were able to be more harassed by the Jewish people than Amma. And so two different things, going earlier and using proper language, and each one deserves its own reward and punishment. Or reward and different reward, as the case may be. Okay. So that's that as far as that piece of Agadta. So that was all that we had gotten into that Agadta, all by way of that we said the pasuk Asher Nosi Yechta, that the Nosi does a sin and then he brings his korban. So we said Asher is Ashrei, fortunate is the generation where the Nosi, where the king is willing to own up to what he did wrong and openly bring a korban about it. And then that led to another drosha with the word Asher, where also we darshan Meloshon Ashrei about tzaddikim and rishoyim, and that led into this whole piece of Agadta. So now getting back to the matter, to the halachas about the king and his korban. Tananabonim, we learn in a b'raisa. The pasuk describes when an individual person has to bring a chatas. So the pasuk says, "May am ha'oretz," from the people of the land that one of them does something wrong and he has to bring a korban. The mem is a mute. So that means "May am ha'oretz prat l'moshiach" and "May am ha'oretz prat l'nosi." It means the word "May am ha'oretz" comes to exclude the kohen moshiach, the kohen who has been anointed with shemana mishra, and also to exclude the nosi, meaning. In other words, they're not going to bring the korban that's described over there that the yochid would bring for his averus, namely a female sheep or a female goat. So the Gemara asks, so the Braisa says, why do we need the mem to exclude them? The pasuk already explicitly tells us that the Kohen Mashiach is going to bring a par helam davashot, is going to bring a par of the par Kohen Mashiach if he does something that would have made him chayv koris b'mezid, and he did it b'shoigig. And the king already says that he's bringing a male goat. So why do we need the mem to be memayit them? We know that already. So like this, Shiyocho, you would think, without the Torah telling you, Mashiach al helam dava maybe al im shigas maisa maybe par, you would think like this, when it comes to the Kohen Mashiach, when there was helam dava and there was shigas maisa, a mistaken psach in halacha, and then he followed it, like we said about the Sanhedrin, then that would be when he brings a par. But you could think, al shigas maisa l'chudeh, but if he only does shigas maisa alone, so when he, for example, paskins at a certain kind of chelav is mutter, and then he goes ahead and eats it on that basis, we would say that's when he brings the par, like the tzibur does. But if he just, let's say, he didn't know that this was chaylev and he ate it, or he forgot that chaylev is also or whatever and he ate it, maybe he would be like a regular person and bring a female sheep or a female goat as his chatas. No, Tamar Loimer, me'ama oretz prat l'moshiach, me'ama oretz prat l'nasi. That is why we have the mute from the mem to tell us not so. The Kohen Mashiach never brings that korban of the regular person. He brings his par in the circumstances where the par is going to apply, and then that's it. Otherwise, if those circumstances don't apply, there's no helam dava plus shigas maisa, then there's nothing. So, okay, the Gemara says, Tenach Mashiach. Fine, so that explains very well why we need the Derosha about the Kohen Mashiach. Elam Nosi B'Shigas Maisu D'Maisi. The fact is that Nosi does bring his Korban only for Shigas Maisa alone. By the Nosi, there doesn't need to be that he made a mistake in Horah. So what is the Miut telling us about the Nosi? The answer is Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Derava Hoch Maya Skinen. For the Nosi, it's a different Miut. What we're talking about is, suppose that this man ate a half a kezias of chaylev before he was appointed king. Vinixmana, then he was appointed king. He ate a kezias of chaylev when he's a hedyot. Vinixmana, and then he was appointed nasi. Va'achakach noydaloi, and then he was informed that he had done wrong and this was chaylev, and now that he's chayav a korban. Safrutad chamin naisi kisboi sira. So you would think maybe now he should bring the female sheep or the female goat, because after all, now when he found out when he actually ate the chaylev was when he was still a commoner. Therefore, the Pasuk has to tell us that not so. The Nei Amoretz teaches us he's accepted from the common run of people, and he brings the king's korban. So the Gemara asks, "Hamichal Reb Shimon?" All right, so that works according to Reb Shimon, the Ozel Basa Yedia, where Reb Shimon says that you go, as we learned yesterday, that you go according to when he finds out. As we learned yesterday, you can have the case where the person did the Avera before he was appointed, and then he was appointed, and Reb Shimon says it depends when he found out about it. If he finds out that it was an Avera before they were appointed, then they're going to be chayav, the korban of a regular person, but if they were informed only afterwards, if they found out only afterwards, then they don't bring a regular person's korban. So fine, then in that case, so this braisa would work very well according to Reb Shimon. So, and Mefoshim point out, actually, are we talking about according to Reb Shimon? Do we say that it has to be both the Chet and the Yediyah were both in the same status? Or do we mean that, from the Gemara earlier that we learned yesterday, it sounded actually like Reb Shimon, that Reb Shimon is going only according to the Yediyah, so there's a bit of discussion about that. Anyway, so the Gemara answers, what about according to the Chachamim who say that you go according to the time of the sin? Why should he be bringing the korban of the korban of the king when he did the Aveda when he was still a commoner? So that doesn't work. Ela Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei D'Rava, so rather Rav Zvid says in the name of Rava, a different explanation. He ate a half a kezias of chaylev when he was a commoner, and a half a kezias is not enough to be mechayev him a korban yet. Vinismana, then he was appointed nasi, and then he ate another half a kezias, and it's all, by the way, it would have to be the tosh kedei achilas pras, so it would have to be like within kedei achilas pras. You have different opinions among the poskim how long it is. The most widespread opinions are that it's anywhere between 4 and 7 minutes, so it would have to be, for example, he ate a half a kezias of chaylev. Three minutes later, they come and tell him that he's the new king. His father just passed away, and he's now succeeding him as king. And then he ate the other half of kezias. So now, you have a full kezias. Vishlimai, and so now he has a complete kezias. V'achakach noydaloi. Now he found out that what he had just eaten was chaylev. Sakrad chamin and itzadet. So now, says Rav Zvid, you would have thought without the miut from the mem of meyam oretz, it should combine together. The naisi kisbo seira, and now therefore he should bring a commoner's korban. The female sheep or the female goat, because he's certainly not going to bring the king's korban, says Rashi, because after all, you don't have the complete kezias, when the complete kezias didn't take place when he was a king. But you would think at least it should combine together and allow him to bring a regular person's korban. Kamash Malon, that is why the Braisa has to tell us, that he never brings a commoner's korban as long as he's serving as king. So therefore, he's not going to bring anything. He's not going to bring a commoner's korban because he's not a commoner. But he's not going to bring the king's korban either because he didn't have a complete kezias when he was a king. So without the mem of Me'am Oretz, we wouldn't have known that, and that's how it is. The Tosfos and Rosh brings a different girsa that first the Gemara had said, that first the Gemara had wanted to say. You're talking about where he had eaten a kezias of chalev and then was deposed as king and then found out and then was saying that according to the Shimon that you have to go according to the idea, you understand that he's potter, but what about according to the Chachamim? And the answer is rather we're talking about he ate a half a kezias when he's a Nasi and then he was deposed and ate the other half a kezias. So unlike Rashi's girsa, as we have in front of us in the Gemara, that we're talking about half kezias became king, half Keziahs, according to the Rosh, the Gersa would be that he was already king, ate half of Keziahs, was deposed, ate the other half, and now we're saying that the Pasuk is telling us a miyut that he doesn't bring the king's carbon. Okay. So the Gemara says, Bominei Rava Min Rav Nachman, Rava asked Rav Nachman, Nisius Maush Tafsin. Does the status of king interrupt things when it comes to eating the half kezias or the half kezasim? So the Gemara says, "Hey, Fidomi, what's the scenario?" And the answer is, suppose that he ate a half kezias when he was a commoner, v'nismana, then he was appointed king, v'ovar, and right after that he was deposed, all within kederach elas pras, v'ishlimoi, and then he ate the other half kezias. So all within the span of 4 minutes or so, he ate the half of Keziahs. They told him, your father passed away, you're king. And then a minute later, they come and tell him, no, you're deposed for whatever reason. Let's say a moment later, he got saras, and then as we learned yesterday, now he can't serve as king anymore. And then he ate the other half of Keziahs. The question is, does that momentary kingship interrupt between the first and second half Keziahsim? You could say, on the one hand, Hossam Hu Delemit Stadef, you know why in the case where it was half before and half during his kingship, or half during and half after, you could say, the Achlet, Paugok Shu Hedyet, or Paugok Shu Nasi. Because fine, the fact is half was in one status and half was in the other status. One is commoner, one is king. Aval Hocha, but in our case, the Aidi of Aidi Kshu Hedyet Achlet, the fact is both of them he ate when he was a Hedyet, mit Stadef, so therefore it ought to be able to combine, a Jomaloshna. Or maybe it's no difference, maybe one way or the other. The fact is that there was an interruption of a different status in between, and therefore it wouldn't combine together, and therefore he wouldn't bring his king's carbon. So my, what's the din? Rav asked Rav Nachman. So the Gemara answers. The Gemara says, "What tifshit le'mahad amar ula amar Rav Yechanan? Shouldn't Rava be able to answer, or Rav Nachman be able to answer the question from what Ula says in the name of Rav Yechanan?" Ochol chaylev, if a person ate a kezias of chaylev, the hifush korban, and he designated an animal for a korban, the hamir, and then he became a mumer, he became a mishumer, he decided, I don't want to keep Yiddishkeit anymore, I'm going to start doing averas habitually. We often use the word mumer to mean specifically where he became a mumer, la'avodas kechavim, where he became an apostate and converted, rachman al-aflan, to another religion, but more generally a mumer means somebody who decides that mitzvahs are not for me, and I'm not obligated in them anymore. Anyway, so he did that. Now at that point, you can't bring his korban. A mumer is there's a miut that a mumer is not able to bring a korban. It's an interesting point. Rav Hirsch points out in his Pirush on Chumash, a mumer is not allowed to bring a korban. On the other hand, the Gemara tells us in a few places, goyim are able to bring korbanos. So a goy, we want to allow him to bring at least certain kinds of korbanos, and hopefully it'll draw him close to Yiddishkeit. But the mumer was saying at this point he's put himself outside the pale of that. He wants to bring a korban, he's going to have to do tshuva first. Anyway, so then we said, v'chozer boy, then this yid did tshuva, and now he's a kosher yid again. So what happens? So he can't bring his korban anymore. Once there came a point when he was disqualified from bringing the korban because he was a mummer, then yidacha, he remains pushed off, and therefore that animal can never be brought as a korban. So, if we go according to that statement, in the same way over here, once in between, he was a king, and as a king, he's not bringing a commoner's korban, then the same thing would apply, and in fact, he's not going to be bringing this korban, even though both half kezasim took place when he was a commoner. But the Gemara says, Hochi Hashta, how are you trying to compare the two cases? Mumer la barasuya korban hu. The fact is that a mumer is not a person who is capable of bringing a korban. He is excluded from the concept of korbanus. high when it comes to the king. Bada Suya Korban, one way or the other, he's capable of bringing a Korban. As a head yet, he can bring a Korban. As a king, he can bring a Korban. The only question is, there was a change of status, and does that affect whether it can combine together or not? So it's not really the same thing. Marshall actually points out that anyway, another point is anyway, that even with the guy who became a mumer in between, actually uncensored Gemaras, by the way, instead of mumer having ishtamid, for some reason the censors didn't like that word, so they changed it. Whatever, anyway, the point is that he became a mumer, a mashumer, in between. So the fact is, if he had eaten an entire kazayas of chaylev, then he still wouldn't be able to bring his korban once he became a mumer, and even though afterwards he did tshuva. Here, before we said that if he ate a whole kazayas when he's a commoner, or a whole kazayas when he's a king, he does bring the korban, whichever korban it is, so it's not really the same thing at all, Marsha asks. In any case, the point is, though, that at least, but it's certainly not comparable, because anyway, the king, one way or the other, when he eats a whole kazayis, is chayav in a korban, whereas the mumer, one way or the other, he's chayav in a korban, whereas the mumer, during the time that he's a mumer, is not chayav in a korban at all. So the Gemara leaves the question open, and the result is that it is, the result is it's left as a suffix, and it's a suffix whether we can bring the korban. And the fact is, so the Rambam just finishes off and says it's a suffix, and therefore you can't, and therefore the result would be, the Rambam doesn't spell it out, but the result would be, the Pashtus said he can't bring the korban, because you can't bring the korban when there's a suffix, because it might be chulin bazara. As far as, by the way, the din is not like the Rambam also paskins, not like Ula in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the mumer, once he does tshuva, is able to bring the korban, because a person is never completely nidcha, and even though the live animal is never completely nidcha. So even though for a while he was off limits for bringing korbanas, but now he's done tshuva, and therefore his korban will be acceptable again. Another question. So, Bominei Reb Zeira Ben Avsheshes. Reb Zeira asked Reb Sheshes another similar question. Ochol Safek Chelev Kshu Hedyet. Suppose that when this person was a commoner, he ate something which he doesn't know was Chelev. So, the classical case, he had two pieces of fat in front of him, one Chelev, one Shuman. He ate one of them, he doesn't know which one. Where classically then he would be bringing an Oshem Toloi, the Noidaloya Vinismana, then he was appointed as king, the Noidaloya Sveke, then he found out that there's a Suffolk over here, and that now he's on the hook for an Oshem Toloi. So Mahu, what is the din? Would he in fact be bringing an Oshem Toloi for this? Because after all, a king, as we talked about yesterday, does bring an Oshem Toloi when he does something which makes him, unlike we learned that Sibur doesn't bring an Oshem Toloi, the Kohen Mashiach doesn't, but the king does. But the question would be though, so Mahu, what would be the din? And the question is, so according to the Chachamim against Reb Shimon, who goes strictly according to his status when he did the Aveda, then you have no reason to ask the question, that he would have to bring an Oshem Toloi, because it doesn't matter, according to them, if he did the Aveda when he was a commoner, he brings one kind of korban. If he did it when he was a king, he brings a different kind of korban. It doesn't matter when he found out, it only matters what status he was when he did the Aveda. So fine, then there's no question he'd be bringing an Oshem Toloi one way or the other. The question will have to be, according to Reb Shimon, who says, again, that you have to factor in not only when he did the Aveda, but also when he finds out what happened. So now, what happens is, over here, so suppose that he had eaten it when he's a hedyot, but he found out that there's a suffix only after he became king. So Reb Shimon had said then that in terms of, had it been a chatas, Reb Shimon had said he wouldn't be bringing a chatas, because of different statuses at the time of the Aveda and the Yediya. Is it the same thing over here with an Oshem Toloi, or does Reb Shimon apply that concept only to a chatas? So the question is, midi ishtinu levada ishtinu l'safik, since had it been a vadai, his korban would have been different, then, and according to Reb Shimon, therefore, because the status changed between the doing and the knowing, then therefore there's no korban. So maybe the same thing applies to the safik as well, so therefore he's not bringing an Oshem Toloi. Oidoma, or maybe you would say, ki ishtinu levadai, di ishtinu korban yidei, it's one thing when it comes to the khatas for a vadai, where, yeah, I mean, his status changes, and along with it, the type of korban that he brings changes. Aval hocha, but over here with an Oshem Toloi, the leishtini korban didei. The fact is, king or commoner, still, if he did the aveda as a commoner and found out as a commoner, according to Reb Shimon, he'd be bringing an Oshem Toloi. if he did it as king and found out the Suffolk what he's king, he'd also be bringing an Oshem Tolu. And one way or the other, it's the exact same carbon, it's a ram. So therefore, so maybe there's no difference. Maybe Reb Shimon would not distinguish, wouldn't care whether the Aveda was done when he was a Hediot and the finding out of the Suffolk when he was king or vice versa. So Ema Lysi Oshem Tolu, so maybe he should bring an Oshem Tolu. So the Gemara finishes off Teiku. We the question is left standing. We don't know the answer. Okay. Continuing on this topic of a mumer that we talked about before, we said Tana Rabbanan. We learned in a Braisa. The pasuk says Me Am Haaretz. So the pasuk says when an individual does an aveda that makes him chayiv achatos. So it says when an individual Me Am Haaretz from the people of the land. So before we said, as opposed to a kohen gadol and a king, and we discussed what those miyotim mean, here's another point. It also means prapla mumer. It also comes to exclude a mumer that he can't bring a korban. Reb Shimon bar Yosi Omer, Meshum Reb Shimon, Reb Shimon bar Yosi says in the name of Reb Shimon, I agree with the din, but we learn it from a different pasuk. A few pasukim earlier, when it talks about the king doing an aveira, the pasuk says, Asher loisa asana bishgaga, that he did something inadvertently that should not have been done, va'oshem, and he's guilty. And then the next pasuk continues that he finds out that he had done wrong and now he has to bring lechatas. So therefore we learn from that hashav b'diyosei, only if had he known he would have retracted, he wouldn't have done what he's about to do, then maybe korban hashav b'diyosei, then he brings the korban for his shgaga. So say for example with chalev, he ate it not knowing that chalev is aser or not knowing that this is chalev. If somebody had come over and told him, Yankel, don't you realize this is chalev, don't do that, then he would have held back and not done it. So now, therefore, that's the kind of shregig, and the same thing with Shabbos, and the same thing with all the other things that a person is chayav achatos for. So that he brings a korban. Loy shav b'diyase, but if he wouldn't have retracted, he would have done it anyway. Eini mei v'korban al shregase. He does not bring a korban for his shregig. The mumer, you go over to him and tell him, don't you realize this is chalev? Well, I don't care. The whole concept of chalev doesn't apply to me. I'm eating it anyway. So therefore, so even though in this particular case it was b'shregeg, he truly didn't know that it was chalev, nevertheless he's not bringing a korban. Okay, so you have two different limudim, one from the mem of me'ama arex and the other from about this business of ashov midiyosei. So the Gemara says, my benayah, what's the actual practical difference between the two opinions? The answer is, amar hamnuna, mumer lecho chalev, or maybe korban, al hadam ikha benayah. The nafkamina between them would be, what if the guy is a mumer as far as eating chalev, but now he wants to bring a korban for blood? So he habitually eats chalev and doesn't care about the fact that it's usur, but he doesn't have a yetzahara about blood. He never eats blood. So now, let's say he accidentally ate some blood, a kazayas of blood, and now he wants to bring a korban for it. Marisov, the Tanakama holds kibin the mumer lecho chalev l'dam nami mumer havi. The Tanakama who learns from Me'ama Oret says it doesn't matter one aveda or the other. The fact is that he's a mumer, and therefore he's completely disqualified from bringing korbanos, and therefore he can't even bring a korban for eating blood b'shregeg. Umar Sova, where Reb Shimon holds, Ladam Miyashov Midiyasehu. As far as dam, at least, if you had told him when he's about to eat it, don't you realize this is blood that is osir, he would have withheld himself, then therefore it's still Yahweh, and Reb Shimon is learning about the kind of, learning that it applies when you have the concept of Ashov Midiyasehu. So therefore here he would have done just that, and therefore he can in fact be, and therefore in fact we could accept a korban from him. So that would be a nafkamina. So the Gemara says, why? How is that a nafkamina? Behold, Rava Omar, didn't Rava say, Dekula alma mumer lecho chalev, I have a mumer ledam, that a person who's a mumer as far as eating chalev is not automatically, therefore, considered a mumer as far as blood, which would imply, therefore, that you could accept a korban from him for blood according to everybody, both Reb Shimon and the Tanakama. So you can't say that's a nafkamina because both of them would agree to that concept. Rather, let's say you have a person who habitually eats nevela and also chalev, because nevela itself is not something that would be chayev kardes, so there's no chatas for eating nevela. So here he habitually eats nevela and other kinds of dvarim asurim, including chalev, l'teoven, for his appetite. So he won't deliberately, let's say, if there is kosher meat available, he won't lahachis, go and eat today for meat. But when, let's say, for example, there's not, right now, there's no kosher meat available, then he'll go and eat today for meat. Or he likes the taste of it or whatever. Anyway, now what happens is this person had a piece of fat in front of him, which he thought was shuman. He thought was permitted fat, and he ate it, not knowing that it really is chaylev. And now he realizes, and now he wants to bring a korban. Now comes the machlokas. Commissively, that's the argument. Marsava came into the oven, ochob amazed. So, the Tanakama holds since at other times he eats chaylev the mazid, whenever he feels like it, whenever it's lotei oven, he will eat chaylev and won't be held back by the fact that it's also mumer. Who then it comes out as far as chaylev itself, he's a mumer, and therefore we can't have him bring a korban as far as chaylev. Marsava, where Reb Shimon holds, given the ilu achkach da tera like ochob the isura. Since he's not a complete mumer after all, he's not eating chaylev and nevela and whatnot lahaches. He's only eating them right now. There's no kosher food available, and I'm hungry, and there's the nearest McDonald's. So if he can find heter, he wouldn't eat iser. Lav mumer, who Reb Shimon considers he's not a total mumer, and in this case, he only ate the chaylev because it was a mistake, and therefore you should be able to accept a korban from him. So that would be a nafka mina. Here that Rambam paskins like the Chachamim, so the result is that if he's a mumur lech or chaylev, even though in this particular case he ate b'shogeg, we're not accepting from him chaylev until he does shuvah completely for the concept of eating chaylev. Okay, so that's that. So that's the nafka mina between them. More on this concept of mumur, ton rabbanon, ocho chaylev. If a person eats chaylev b'mezin zehu mumur, then that's the definition of a mumur. The ezehum mumer. So what do we mean by a mumer? Ochan levelus the chefes shkotzim ramasim. So he eats habitually or lahaches or whatever. He eats levelus chefes shkotzim ramasim. Now he's considered a mumer as far as and so Rashi actually points out all of those things are things that a person would be naturally repelled by. A normal person doesn't eat nevela. A normal person doesn't eat shkotzim ramasim, bugs and creepy crawly creatures like that. So if he's eating those, the shosa yain nesach, we'll explain that in a second. We just said he's a mumer. If he eats chaylev, so what do you mean, what is a mumer? So first we'll bring the braisa, then we'll explain it. So first, okay, the mumer is if he eats nevelus the treif, the shkotzim or mosim, the shosa yain nesach, or if he drinks the yain nesach, Rabbi Yehuda ema afalovish kilayim, Rabbi Yehuda says also a person who wears kilayim, who wears shakins. So let's analyze the braisa. Omamar ocho chaylev mumer. Zehu mumer. If he eats chaylev, then he's defined as a mumer. Zehu mumer oichol nevelas chola. And what is a mumer? Someone who eats nevelas, etc. My comma. What is the braisa saying? First, it's saying that a mumer is somebody who eats chaylev, and then it's asking, what is a mumer? And it gives another definition. So Omar Rav Babachana, Omar Rabbi Yechanan, Hochi Kamar. The braisa means as follows. Ocho chaylev the te'oven. If a person eats chaylev because of his appetite, not lahachis, but just again, there's no kosher food available right now, so he just goes and eats chaylev. Hareza mumer, then he's a mumer. Lahachis, but if he does the same thing lahachis, even when there's kosher food available, he says, Aftzalochis, I'm going to go eat the chaylev. Hareza tzduki, then he's a different category. Then he's called a tzduki. Tzduki over here is a change of the sense, so it's really supposed to be, he's a min. One meaning of min in the Gemara means the early Christians, so the censors, once Gemaras were printed, didn't like that, and they would replace it with other terms such as tzaduki. So in other words, you have the difference between whether he's a mumer or whether he's a min, which is worse. And a min, for example, if he shechts an animal, it's also because we have to be concerned that when a min shechts, he's likely to be thinking about avodah zarah, and that would make the animal also. So now, ve'ezeru mumer, debesame tzduki, or min, what is a mumer who we can assume to be a min, even when we don't know? So let's say we don't know. Is he l'ta'avon or l'hachas? How do we determine it? Heavy omer. So now you're going to say, eichel nevela r'treifas shkotzim r'masim, if he eats nevela r'treifas shkotzim r'masim, which are things that a normal person would not eat, a normal person is nauseated by them, then you can be sure that he's doing it l'hachas. So that would be how we tell. Is he eating something that a normal person wouldn't eat? The Rosh points out, by nevela, you're talking about, let's say, we don't mean nevela as in, let's say, you know, the shchita knife had a nick in it, a normal person wouldn't hold back from eating that. The only reason we don't eat it is because it's also to eat. But as far as nevela, though, fine, maybe you could say we're talking about one that's already decaying. What are you gonna do with trefa? So okay, Rashi maybe doesn't have the word treifa over here. Tosfos elsewhere explains we can be talking about, let's say, that you have a nevela, for example, would be the animal died from some kind of sickness, so a normal person wouldn't eat that. And trefa would be, for example, that his neck was broken. And again, a normal person wouldn't eat such a thing. So now when he eats it, then we can be sure it's lahachas. And the shosa yayin nesach, and the same thing would also be, if he drinks yayin nesach. Now yayin nesach, unlike nevelos or trefas, etc., is not something that a normal person would be nauseated by, but nevertheless, if he drinks it, then we have good reason to say that in fact he's a mumer. That he's a mumer lahachas, and not just latayavim. And the point is, the Rosh says, because after all, the wine that was poured as a libation in front of Avodah Zarah is a pretty serious isser. So therefore, that would be a reason to call him, a mumer, to call him a min for that. The different answer that Keren Ora says about all these things, we're not just talking about something that they're nauseating, etc., but all of these things, it's so easy to find the same thing in Heter. Why do you doubt to need to eat Nevelos or Trefas, etc.? It's easy enough to find kosher meat. Why do you doubt to need to drink Yain Nesach? It's easy enough to find kosher wine. So therefore, so if he does anyway, then we have good reason, says the Keren Ora, to argue that he's doing it lachis. Okay. So that would be that. So then we would say that he's considered like a min, and a shchita is possible. Now, we said in the Braise, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda says also a person who wears kilayim, who wears shatnez. So, my benayu, what's the svara that the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda are arguing about? Why would they argue about whether he wears kilayim? And the answer is, it's about kilayim zirabbanon. The nafkamina between them would be if he's wearing kilayim that are also only midrabbanon. You have certain things. You have for the Gemara explains elsewhere that for it to be also daraisa has to be shua toviv. The word shatnez is short for shua toviv nuz, which means felted, spun, and woven. So midaraisa, it's considered shatnez only if, or Rashi explains, only if all those three things were done to the wool and linen together. But if it was only one of them or two of them, then it's also only midrabanan. So now if a person wears something, which is shatnez only midrabanan. So is he considered a mumer then? Mar sovar, the Tanakama holds, midaraisa having mumer, only if he's daraisa, midaraisa having mumer, only if he's violating things that are also daraisa, is he branded a mumer. Midrabanan loy having mumer, but if he only does things that are also midrabanan, you can't call him a mumer for that. Well, mar sovar, Rabbi Yossi would hold, fine, generally I agree with that, but kilayim, given them a farisim isure, kilayim is one of those things that everybody knows, of the isur of it. So why is he wearing kilayim? Or the Meiri explains a little differently, that it's mefursim. When he's wearing kilayim, it becomes very obvious. Every time he's walking down the street, people can see that he's wearing kilayim. So therefore, I feel a bit d'rabbanan on having mumer, so Rabbi Yosef Behuda would say that that's enough to make him a mumer. Okay. Further on this topic of the mumulahachis, pligibar of Acha and Ravina. Rav Acha and Ravina have a further discussion, have a further argument about this point of what's the definition of a mumulahachis. Chad amr te'oven mumer ulahachis tzduki. One says that if he eats chalev and other isurim because of his appetite, because when at the moment there's no kosher of food available, then he eats the treif, then he's a mumer. But if he does lahachis, even when there's kosher of food available, then he's tzduki, or we said that's really a sensory change from min. So that's what we said before in the Braisa, that if he eats the treoven, he's a mumer, and if he eats lahachis, then he's a min. The Chadam, or the other one, learns the Braisa differently. Lahachis nami mumer, even if he eats the chel of lahachis, only to anger Hashem, even when there is perfectly good kosher of food available, he would still be considered a mumer, not yet a tzduki, not yet a min. His shchita would still be kosher. Elor, is there a tzduki, kol oivet avadis kachavim, he would learn the Braisa to be saying that, that only when he worships Avodah Zarah is he considered to be a tzduki or a min. So the Gemara says, Meisvi, so I have a contradiction on the opinion that says that if he eats lahachas, that automatically makes him a min. A braisa says, ochel parish echad, if a person eats one flea, or yatush echad, or one mosquito, they're tiny, they're even less than a kazayis, but it's still also because of barrier, and if you get malchus for it, hareza mumer, then he's considered a mumer. Now, to eat a flea or a mosquito, he's definitely doing lahachas, because these are not things that a person eats with teyoven. And we're only calling him a mumer. We're not calling him a tzduki or a min. So wouldn't that support the opinion that even if he eats lahachis, he's only yet a min. He's only yet
He's only yet a mummer.
And the answer is hosam, the omer eten tam visura. Because there you can have, for example, why did he eat the flea? Why did he eat the bug? Because he says, for one time, I want to taste what this issue tastes like. So therefore, you can't yet say that he's doing lahachas. But if he does it again and again, then yeah, you can tell, you can say that he's a min. And his shitta would be possible. Okay. Getting back to the matter of the Nasi now, the Mishnah had said, Ve'ezeu Nasi Zemelechola. What is the definition of the Nasi? Is the king who there's nobody higher than Hashem, there's nobody above him except Hashem in the government. So, the Braisa says, Tonan Abanan, Nasi, when the Pasuk says the Nasi, Yochol Nasi Shevet K'Nachshon Aminadav, maybe it means the Nasi of one individual Shevet, like Nachshon and his fellow Nasiim, should have to bring the special korban. Talmud Lomar, Mikol Mitzvah, Hashem Aleikov, therefore the Pasuk continues, and says that he broke one of the mitzvahs of Hashem, his God. So we have a Gzeira Shava. Ulahalan Omer, later on, when you have the parasha of the king, in parasha Shreftim, it says, Aman Yuma the Yiras Hashem Aleikov, that he has to have a copy of the Torah with him all the time and learn from it constantly, so that he should learn to fear Hashem, his God. And there we're talking about the king of the whole Jewish people, so we have Gzeira Shava. But the Rosh points out that you need both. It's not just enough to say Hashem Aleikov, because there's a lot of places in the Torah where it says Hashem Aleikov, so really the Mishnah had made it sound as though we learn it only from that, but really we're learning it from Gzeira Shava on those words. So therefore we learn from that. The parasha of the king is talking about the actual king, and there's nobody higher than Tosam Alech HaMelech, and there's nobody higher than him in the government. Ask Nasi Shein Al Gabav El Hashem Aleikov. Well, the same thing with the Nasi. It has to be, the definition is there's nobody higher than there's nobody above him other than Hashem. There's nobody, no human being higher than him in the government. And by the way, what we mean is by that, we mean among the government of the Jewish people. You could have, for example, let's say he may be a vassal of a Goyish king, but we're not counting that. We're saying within the Jewish people, he's the highest government authority. So the Gemara says in this vein, Rebbe, who was the Nasi of his times in Eretz Yisrael, now by his times there was long since no kingship of the Jewish people. Rebbe was living, they were living under Roman rule at the time, but Rebbe is the Nasi of the Jewish people, meaning again that he's the highest Jew in government, and the exclusive one. So he asks him, suppose that I were to do something that made me chayav achatos, would I be bringing a male goat like the Nasi? If I had lived in the time of the Beis Mikdash. I'm considered a Nasi, as in that's my title of Nasi. Does that match the definition of Nasi as the Torah says? Amaleh, Sir Abchia answers him, Harek Saros Chob Bavel. You know, you have your rival in Bavel. At that time, you had in Eretz Yisrael, there were Nasiim, who were from Hillel's times and on. It was a hereditary position, and you have Hillel, and then his son, and his son after him, etc. Meanwhile, in Bavel, from the time of Golas Yechoniah, there was always a hereditary office there called the Reish Galusa, who was the governor of the Jews in Bavel. It also went from father to son, and it was also in Malchus Beis David. So therefore, Sir Abchia tells him, you have your rival in Babel. He's not just your rival, he's actually great, he actually outranks you. He has greater power than you, and therefore, no, you're not you wouldn't be considered the Nasi. So Eisvei, so Rebbe says, why? I mean, how is he greater than me? We learn in a Braisa, Malchi Yisrael, Malchi is based of it, Elam Avim L'Atzman, Elam Avim L'Atzman. When you have, during the period of Jewish history, when there were two rival kingships, the Ten Shvatim and versus Malchus based of it, any one of those kings, if he did something that made him Chayav Achatos, would be bringing a sir. There were two contemporaneous kings. Doesn't matter. Neither one of them is subject to the other. Each one is in his in his kingdom is Einav Gabav Elah Shevelikov, and therefore he would be bringing the korban. So Rebbe's saying, what's the problem? The Reish Galusa has jurisdiction in Bavel. I have the highest jurisdiction in Eretz Yisrael. So what that he's there? Why would that prevent me from bringing a sir if I were in that position? Explains, the difference is with Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Yehuda, one of them is not subject to the other. We in Eretz Yisrael are considered to be under the authority of the Reish Galusa in Bavel. So therefore, say you're not the highest authority. The Nosi, the Reish Galusa, if he were to do that, then he would have to bring a sir. But you're subordinate to him. Rav Safra Masni Hochi. Rav Safra learned a different version of how the discussion went. That Bomine Rebbe min Apriya, in this version, Rebbe asked Apriya, Kugain Ani Mao B'Sir, what would be the din? Would I bring a Sir if I lived when the Bismithish was standing, or if the Bismithish was rebuilt in our times? Omalei, so Apriya answers, not so much a matter of where each one has jurisdiction, but Hosim Shevet Hochem Achoike. The ones, the Resh Galusa and Babel, has a greater scope of leadership. He's the Shevet, he's the staff, as in he has the ability, if people disobey him, he has the ability to have them beaten for insubordination. So therefore, say he would be considered a king, he would bring the sir. On the other hand, you, in Eretz Yisrael, you're the Nasi, you don't have so much political power. You're the teacher of Torah to the Jewish people, but you don't have that secular jurisdiction to be able to have people beaten for disobeying you. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when Yaakov gives the bracha to Yehuda, he says Lo Yosur Shevet Mi Yehuda Mechoikik Bin Raglav. He says the staff will never depart from Yehuda and the Mechoikik, the lawgiver, from between his legs. So we learn in a Braisa that means Yaakov is hinting with Ruach HaKodesh to these two roles among the Jewish people. Lo Yosur Shevet Mi Yehuda, when it says the staff will not go away from Yehuda. Zer Rosh Golosh of Babel means the Rosh Golosha in Babel, that they're always going, as long as there's a Rosh Golosha ship, it's always going to be in the family, in the descendants of Yehuda. Where he's able to exert control over the Jewish people with a stick, if necessary. So he's called Shevet, which also means a stick or a staff. When he continues, the lawgiver, from between his legs, from between his descendants, Elu bnei bono shel Hillel. This refers to the descendants of Hillel in Eretz Yisrael, from Alamdim Torah, Yisrael Barabim, where they teach Torah to the Jewish people in public. So therefore, in other words, your scope of leadership, says Rav Chiya to Rebbe, is not as great as that of the Reish Galusa in Babel, who actually has tremendous political power, and therefore, if there were to be a sawyer brought, then he would be bringing it, you would not. There is, by the way, a different play than Yerushalmi in this connection, where Rebbe says on himself that Rebbe concedes to Rav Chiya's point, and he says, you know what, there is also the point that Rosh HaGalusa are descended Ben Achaben from David in the male line, whereas I'm descended from David only through the female line. Either Hillel himself was descended from Yehuda only in the female line, or at some point, no, Rebbe is Ben Achaben from Hillel, so it would mean that Hillel himself, his mother was from Shevet Yehuda, his father was not. So therefore, so Rebbe agreed that the Reish Galusa outranks him, and then the Gemara tells the Yerushalmi goes on to tell the story over there. So Rebbe says, if the Reish Galusa from Bavel were to ever come and move here to Eretz Yisrael, I would be forced to resign my position in favor of him because he outranks me. So one time, Rav Chiya comes and tells Rebbe, the Reish Galusa has come, and Rebbe turned pale. He thought that really he decided, to move to Eretz Yisrael, and Rebbe is going to have to give up his Nasi-ship. Rebbe was a paragon of Anivus, but still, it's very hard to do that. Then Rav Chiya clarifies, he means that the Reish Galusa in Bavel passed away, and we're bringing his coffin over here. And the story goes on that Rebbe was very offended that Rav Chiya had misled him like that. You have a whole story that developed from there. But we see also from that the Reish Galusa outranks the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, either because in the first version we were saying that we in Eretz Yisrael are subject to him, maybe based on that point, because they're from the male line of David and Revan and then his family of the Nasiim, or from the female line, or just because in Rav Safra's version, because they have greater political power, and either way, they would be the ones to bring the sir if it came to that. Okay.